Welcome to the Full Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy, recording at 1:37 PM, that is Pacific Summer Time. Today is July 30th. Google just reported earnings. They've doubled sales in their cloud division. YouTube is doing very well, but it's the first time in years that they've missed on advertising budgets. So it's down in after-hours trading, despite the fact that it was up $15 during the open session. Now, today was also an important day for other companies, particularly Apple. The share traded up to $400 in here after the close, following a really quite impressive earnings. And that is now testing the peak. We can see that it paused around the 300 level. It's been pausing around 400 for the last while, and it's right back up there now in after hours trading. Now, when we think about what's been happening in the stock market today, the Dow Jones was off its lows, but it did a gap lower and then traded down in the first half hour trading. Part of the reason for that was because unemployment claims continue to rise. So that is throwing some doubt on the V-shaped recovery hypothesis. In fact, I think most people have concluded now that that is an unrealizable target. Now, when we start to think about, well, what is it that therefore could change the way that people are thinking about how to interact with this market? Well, I think the thing that really started to be crystallized in the eyes of investors in here today was the fact that the Federal Reserve yesterday may not have announced any fresh measures, but they have got a lot of leeway to use the measures that have already been announced. And the vast majority of those sorts of measures that have been announced have not been used. That's particularly true of the Paycheck Protection Liquidity Facility, and that was $500 billion alone. The corporate credit facilities have barely been used at all, but it was over $700 billion. So even in the event that we do have a slowing down of economic activity, there is clear potential for the Federal Reserve to greatly expand its assistance without engaging in fresh additional stimulative measures, and even then they can still add additional measures if need be. But the 10-year Treasury yield was further contracting in here, because investors are pretty much betting on the fact that the economic recovery is going to be moderate, that the pressure on wages, because there are so many people unemployed that companies simply don't need to raise wages. There has also been this growing trend that companies believe that if they move their employees to remote locations outside of big cities, that they can pay them less. And that has certainly been the case with some of the big technology firms. And when you start to think about the high wages that those people might have been earning previously, then significant declines is going to show up in economic activity overall. It's also worth reminding ourselves that the average hourly earnings figure, it absolutely exploded on the upside when the lockdowns started, and it is now moderating. It's back down to approximately 5%, having been as high as, I can't quite see the side of the chart, 8%. That's historically extraordinarily high. In fact, over the course of the last couple of decades, any time it has gone above 4% or even approached 4% in wage growth, that has represented the top of the cycle. So this spike higher is a clear anomaly, and there is the clear intention of companies to try and pay people less. Well, that's sharply deflationary in the short term. What we've also started to see is that governments around the world are looking at how they can stimulate activity. They are really quite attuned to the fact that there are deflationary forces out there. And the firepower that the Federal Reserve has is certainly very clear. Then you also have the additional point that the Europeans are becoming more aggressive in terms of the kinds of assistance that they can make available. And the issuance of pan-European bonds is a significant development. So that is something that is likely to have a material effect on stimulative measures for Europe. When we think, though, about what's been going on in here today in European markets, they were all down in the region of 2%, some in excess of 3%. The DAX index in particular pulled back quite sharply. It's also been among the best performers. It's now right in the region of the trend mean. Then when we think about the outlook for Spain, where the number of cases is rising, then it has pulled back and it is now just below the 7,000 level. That's the upper side of the underlying trading range. This is a natural area where we might anticipate some support starting to come through for both indices. Now, the euro extended its advance in here today. The fact that Europe is now beginning to abandon the fiscal straitjacket and looking at providing pan-European assistance measures, really coming off the fence and starting to become more aggressive in terms of both fiscal or combined fiscal and monetary stimulus. And that does have the potential to stoke economic growth in the region. And that is also, I think it has to be pointed out that Europe has done a better job of capitalizing on its more comprehensive public health system than the USA has. The harsh reality is that the USA spends more money on healthcare than any other country in the world and gets substantially worse results. And we are seeing that in real time in terms of the response to the coronavirus. And it's another example of how the pandemic is an accelerant. It is taking trends that had been evolving slowly for a prolonged period and just simply accelerating them like rocket fuel. The euro has now very clearly broken its downtrend and it continues to march higher. The pound is up towards the 130 area. In fact, it's at 131 at the end of trading and approaching the peaks over the last 18 months. But I would I think the most important thing that it has done is to post that failed downside break below 120 in March, and the upper side of the range is a lot closer to 135 to 140 than 130. So there is certainly potential here for additional upside. But the much bigger picture is that the dollar index has broken its uptrend, and this is, I think, one of the most important events that's happened in quite some time. The clear tailwind that that Wall Street received from international investors over the course of the last few years was certainly on the back of outsized economic growth relative to the rest of the world and a strong interest rate differential and stronger currency. And that helped to really stoke investment demand. Well, the dollar is now declining, so it's flattering the nominal prices of some of these indices. But it does hold out the prospect that on a relative value and constant currency basis, that other sectors are going to do better. So when we think, for example, about the performance of a Europe ETF, but in US dollars, it is also back above its trend mean. And it was well off the lows in here today, not least because of the strength of the currency relative to the weakness that we'd seen in European markets. I think this is a very significant development. There's the potential that Europe is going to do better. And it's also worth highlighting that oil prices are comparatively affordable. Now, oil today was down in a reasonably dynamic manner at one point during the day, but recouped the entire decline. It's back around the 43 level, but that's substantially better than $70, where it was back in January. Europe, as a major energy consumer and importer, benefits enormously from weaker energy prices. That's equally true of a number of the high population emerging markets. So that's an additional tailwind. Then, of course, we have the other less discussed stimulative effect that the US dollar has on everywhere else in the world. The more that the dollar falls, the greater effect that it has on the size of central bank balance sheets internationally. So despite the fact that the Federal Reserve's balance sheet has not in fact been rising over the course of the last 6 weeks, the fact that the dollar has been going down has continued to inflate the value of assets on other central banks' balance sheets. So the total is now up to $27 trillion, which is an increase of approximately $1 trillion in the last month. So this is still a clear uptrend, and it's clearly stimulative from the perspective of a global investor. It holds out the potential that other assets are going to do better. Well, gold has been the one that has been doing best over the course of the last couple of weeks. Now, gold was in negative territory in here today, and it is right in the region of the 2000 level. So it's not at all beyond the bounds of possibility that we get some consolidation in this area. Silver was down a bit more. It was down about 80 cents before I started recording. It's been paired somewhat. Now, we have had a very meaningful breakout and a very wide overextension and overbought condition. So it's quite likely we're going to get a first step above the base and some consolidation, not least because silver prices doubled in the space of just 4 months. So we are due some consolidation, and this is then likely to create the next favorable buying opportunity. When we think about silver miners, they had got right up to test the peak from back in 2016, so it's now likely that we get a little pause in here. And as long as it is holding the sequence of higher reaction lows, we can continue to give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. A bull market does not unfold in the space of 2 weeks, and it will both ebb and flow, and therefore... And we also have to, I think, be cognizant of the fact that precious metals do tend to have sawtooth profiles. In other words, breakouts are seldom sustained, and sequences of higher reaction lows are sustained. So we do tend to get these choppy uptrends, particularly at the beginning of a secular move. And what that suggests is that they really are best bought following reactions. That's obviously more difficult because these reactions can be scary, but it also provides a rather attractive entry opportunity from a longer-term perspective. When we look at platinum, it had got right up to test the $1,000 level and was down another $40 in here today, but right in the region of the trend mean and the upper side of the underlying range. This is a natural area where we might anticipate some support coming through. I do think that it is more likely than not that we are going to see that $1,000 level surmounted, and that we will see additional upside from here. When we then think about emerging markets, with the dollar declining, then it is quite rational to start thinking about, well, where is that going to benefit most? So the Nifty index was or has been right in the region of its trend mean. Now, it was in negative territory in here today. Interestingly, Reliance Industries has mirrored the kind of outsized boost in its profitability that the other big technology companies have had with its 4G network in India. So that has curtailed the capacity for some additional downside in here, but it really is quite overextended, and we've had a very meaningful move in just a very short period of time. The banking sector has been a leader in the Indian market for a really quite long time. It was in negative territory in here today. It is going to have to do better than that and sustain the move above the 25,000 level in order to clearly demonstrate that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. Then, when we think about the Indonesian market, it has also been steadier in here. It is back above the 5,000 level, continuing to unwind the oversold condition relative to the trend mean. The Vietnamese market has been subject to some volatility of late, but it is holding the recent lows, and this will obviously need to do better, and we'll need to see upside follow through. But what I found particularly interesting earlier this week was the Vietnam Opportunities Fund's ability to hold the region of the trend mean, and it has been outperforming in no uncertain terms since March of this year. The Filipino market has been a bit of a laggard in nominal terms, but the strength of the currency has been certainly boosting the value of assets from an international perspective. So there is the potential here that this is not much more than a consolidation of recent gains. Now, when we think about the additional asset classes that can benefit from a weaker dollar, well, commodities obviously jump out, and the continuous commodity index is still above its trend mean. Now, we've had a substantial rebound, and it was pretty much unchanged in here today. We're going to have to see it continue to hold the major reaction lows if the benefit of the doubt is to continue to be given to the upside. Copper prices have been pausing below the $3 level for most of the last month. They were well off the lows in here today. So we're certainly seeing that there is some demand coming through, and that there is some buying the dip activity evident in the commodities, not least because of the weakness of the dollar. The reality is that the stimulative measures that are required to support the US economy are rather extraordinary in size and much larger than the kinds of measures that are being deployed everywhere else. It is likely that the quantity of assistance that China is going to have to provide to its economy is going to be backloaded into the end of the year, and it could reach a deficit of around 7%. So that is also renminbi negative, and the renminbi was weaker in here today. And against a background where the dollar has been particularly weak, well, therefore, when we look at the renminbi in other currencies, that this is a very clear breakout by the euro versus the renminbi. Then, when we contrast that with the strength of the Japanese yen, which is clearly sustaining the breakout from the range over the last few months and coming back to test the lows, the dollar's lows from back in March. I think it's important to highlight, though, that there has been a very clear sequence of higher reaction lows. Let me just turn the trend around and look at it from an additional perspective. This looks like a base formation, and if that's the case, there is clear potential that the yen is going to continue to strengthen from here, and it will require really quite clear and substantive action by both the Japanese government and the Bank of Japan to curtail the rise of the currency. So they're going to have to step in an aggressive manner in order to stop the renminbi from, stop the yen from rising, because this looks like a really very bullish pattern at this stage. And we have certainly got the argument that the US dollar looks like it has now clearly broken its downtrend. The Taiwanese dollar has been strengthening for most of the last 12 months, and it has come back to test the peaks and shown inversely here from 2018 and going all the way back to 2012 and 2011. So it's a natural area where we might anticipate some consolidation, but it's hard to imagine why the Taiwanese dollar should be weakening in a dynamic manner from current levels. The success of Taiwan Semiconductor in really beating Intel at its own game is, I think, really quite a significant development. Now, the Taiwanese index has surged higher, and it is at new all-time highs, or at least it was earlier this week. It's also looking increasingly likely that it has completed a first step above what was effectively an almost 30-year base formation. And Taiwan is potentially a lead indicator for Japan. The two economies are very closely entwined, and they both have a very significant technology manufacturing sector. So then when we think about the Japanese yen on a long-term basis, or the Nikkei on a long-term basis, it has also got first step above the base characteristics, although it is still very shy of the peak put in 1989. The strength of the yen is something that is either going to deter nominal price appreciation for the stock market, or it's going to start attracting assets into Japan because of the more attractive valuation, and also because of the potential for the valuations and technology, but also the safe haven of the currency to act as a safe haven relative to the very clear weakness of the US dollar. So we're at a pivotal point for Japanese markets overall, because it does look like the yen is going to move meaningfully from here in the absence of very clear action to curtail that move. China is also embarking upon a digital currency, and they are in the process of testing that in four cities right now. Now, as far as I can figure out, it looks like a coupon book, and it's effectively a ration book. It's going to be used as a medium of exchange for daily conveniences. Now, that's the creation of a parallel currency. So you're looking at the scope for a ration book to be used for day-to-day items, and for the normal currency to be used for international transactions. But that opens up the very clear potential for a complete debasement of the financial assets of domestic savers. And that is something that should obviously be of interest to all governments, but particularly for Chinese consumers. And that also brings us back to the argument for gold. While we've certainly seen an incredible advance, particularly from the lows back in March, and we are right in the region of a big psychological level, and we do have room for consolidation here, and I do think that some consolidation in the region of a big psychological level is likely, the medium-term bullish argument is still very clear, and therefore any kind of weakness can be viewed as a buying opportunity. I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.